Remaking Middle School is launching a middle school listening tour. We want to know what comes to mind when you hear middle school. What do you think is and isn't working for middle school students today? What is the future of middle-level education? If you are any of the following, a parent, a teacher, administrator, youth development professional, policymaker, or youth advocate of middle grade students, we would love to hear from you. There are two ways in which you can lend your voice to this project. You can complete an online survey. The survey will take about 10 minutes to complete. And or you can chat with a member of the Remaking Middle School team. Interviews take about 30 to 45 minutes of your time and can be done by phone or Zoom. If you're interested in sharing your perspective on middle school education, please visit remakingmiddleschool.org and click sign up for the listening tour. Hi, this is Jason Cascarino. Thanks for listening to the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, a production of the Remaking Middle School Initiative, whose founding partners include Youth Next, the University of Virginia's Center to Promote Effective Youth Development, and the Association for Middle Level Education, or AMLE. You can learn about Remaking Middle School on the web at remakingmiddleschool.org. Now, here's this episode. Hello and welcome to the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, where we explore the many facets that impact young adolescents in the middle school years, from the adverse to the awkward to the awesome. I'm your host, Jason Cascarino. Today, I talk with Nate Pietrini and Yolanda Luna Miraz from High Jump, a 30-year-old academic enrichment program offered to high-achieving but under-resourced students in Chicago. Nate is a former teacher and principal, and now High Jump's executive director. Yolanda is chief programs officer, having also been an educator and school leader. Both are working to expand High Jump's programming to more students in the middle grades to support their learning and development, and better prepare them for the transition into high school, which a great many students find hard to do well.
So you see students get to high school, and they're just unsure and unclear of what the values are, the norms and the expectations within that school. And when they learn about it, they learn about it after they've screwed up. They learn about it after their grades got trashed, right? So if you had a really lenient homework policy in your middle school, but you don't have one in your high school, you don't fully understand what that means because you've never had to understand what that means, you get dinged on it, right? And so I think it's really important at these transition years that people remember that the rug is getting pulled out from under kids, and just because they crossed over from eighth grade to ninth grade, they're not all of a sudden a young adult who can fully advocate for themselves, who seeks out all the answers on their own. And I think ninth grade staff and faculty really need to treat young students like it's gradual release and really reground them in their community.
In part one of our conversation, Nate, Yolanda, and I talk about the history and evolution of High Jump, how it blends academic enrichment and support with social and emotional skill development and self-exploration, and specific programming to help students prepare for the transition to high school. In part two, we touch upon the various ways High Jump measures success, both near-term and long-term, and both academic and social and emotional development, and the value programs like High Jump play in the emerging COVID recovery and eventually post-COVID landscape. That's in just a little bit. Now, here's part one of my interview with Nate Pietrini and Yolanda Luna Miraz. Nate and Yolanda, it's so great having you here. Thanks for joining me.
Our pleasure, Jason.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm excited to get to talk with you about High Jump. We've done a few episodes now on out-of-school time programs that focus on the learning and development of young adolescents in the middle grades, and I'm eager to add High Jump to that mix. Before we get into that, let's just get a little background on the two of you. Nate, you are the executive director of High Jump. You came to this role having been an educator in schools. You were a teacher and then a principal. And I think you were a soccer coach along the way somewhere,
yeah.
I read.
Go Raiders.
Yeah, there you go. What was interesting to me is I noticed references to leadership, specifically educational leadership, in your background in a handful of ways. You know, co-founding a new school, a doctorate through the Urban Education Leadership Program, which you and I know very well at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and participation in like the leadership Greater Chicago program. I'm curious to know, is leadership something that interests you as a discipline as much as it is your profession?
I think leadership interests me in the sense that everything I've learned and studied or experienced shows that it's the most important thing out there, right? So, I mean, you mentioned that I'm an educator. Before I came to High Jump, that was the only thing I'd ever done. I was a teacher. And really, it was there as a founding teacher of a high school on Chicago's South Side that I saw the power of leadership and was like, oh, man, I really like my job. But if I want to support more kids, the best thing that I can do is help other people get better at teaching so that kids get better at learning. And so that was when I sort of started exploring this idea of educational leadership and really what is the role of a school leader. And I think the role of a school leader is to develop conditions so that as many teachers as possible can keep getting better in as many ways as possible so that kids get better, to do it in a unified, collaborative way in response to the needs of those teachers and in response to the needs of those kids. So that really was what I liked. The second I had that aha moment, that is what I drove myself into and have always tried to continue to do that. So even though right now most of my time is spent on things like communication, board governance, and fundraising, I still really think of myself as an educator and an education leader.
And Yolanda, you have some similar threads to Nate in your background. You're a longtime educator, both teacher and principal, making the leap into the world of nonprofit educational programming for youth. What compelled you to redeploy, if you will, your talent and experience to the kind of work that High Jump does with students?
One of the big things for me as an educator is thinking about my values as a person. It can be really hard to navigate CPS. I joke that the longest relationship I've ever had in my life is with CPS. Ever since my parents put me in a CPS school since I was 3, I feel like I never left. So I'm a product of CPS. My kids go there. And so I understand it well. But thinking about, you know, how can I maximize my impact as an educator? Most recently, I was a principal of Decatur Classical School, which was one of the best elementary schools in the state. We won a blue ribbon. And I had just felt that, you know, I had met a lot of important goals that mattered to people, but I wanted to do more. And could I bring my talents that started me into teaching, where I started in Uptown and working with middle school youth? And that has really been my passion for my entire career. I'm a middle school teacher at heart. And so High Jump really shared a lot of the values that I have, and I wanted to focus on middle school, which is a time that we know is so critical for the youth of Chicago. And knowing that I made a difference and that my middle school teachers made a difference for me, it's why I know I went to college. I wanted to replicate that for as many CPS students and children of Chicago.
High Jump, you know, for me, the name implies aspiration, movement, reach, momentum. You get all these connotations. I want to get into the programming and what you all do for young people. But first, Nate, let's get a bit of context. Why does High Jump exist? It's been around for quite some time, more than 30 years, I think. What need or opportunity did High Jump's founders see? What did they want to accomplish?
We've been around for 32 years. And as you can imagine, who we were 32 years ago is not so much who we are anymore, but we hold true to a lot of the same core pillars and a lot of the same ways in which we support our young people. So we were started by this wonderful woman, Eleanor Nicholson, here in Chicago 32 years ago, who's a high school assistant principal at the Latin School of Chicago. It's an independent school here in Chicago, and they were noticing that in ninth grade, a lot of their students of color, specifically new students at the school from limited economic means, were not staying at the school after ninth grade. And they were leaving for one of two reasons, was the trend over time, right? Number one, kids not feeling a sense of belonging at that school, right? And then number two, students coming into a school who performed incredibly well in their grades, straight A's, incredibly well on standardized exams, 99th percentile, but struggling academically because of exposure and opportunity up until that point, right? So if you're going to ninth grade and you're entering a class, a math class with kids who have already taken Algebra 1 and you haven't, doesn't matter that you scored 99th percentile and you're an A-plus student at your prior school, you're going to struggle, right? So she was trying to figure out, how do we support students earlier on to help them thrive in high school. So she developed this program that was supporting kids in the community and helped them really be successful in ninth grade, wherever they end up going to high school. So she started it really with that goal of how do we have a great ninth grade year and then maybe survive and thrive throughout high school and enjoy high school. Well, they served 16 kids. Now we are serving this year across our two middle school programs in 1 year, 270 students, give or take. And really our main goal is high quality out of school time programming so that one day kids will graduate college and kids will achieve upward economic mobility, have family sustaining wage and great careers.
And you're in a handful of sites. I don't know if they're all lab schools. Is the lab school environment intentional?
So we operate six campuses right now, and a campus functions really like a second school for students. So when a student does high jump, they're committing to about 350 hours per year in one of our programs and 150 hours per year in our second middle school program. So it's a big time commitment. We have three huge campuses, and what those campuses are for our students involved is the students coming to high jump for the full summer. It's 6 weeks, 8 hours a day. We bus them, we feed them, they have classes, they have teachers, they have homework. And then they come to us every other Saturday during the school year. So that's a huge commitment. Field trips, parent-teacher conferences, it feels a lot like they're part of that second school. And so we intentionally run our program out of three different independent schools here in Chicago for a number of reasons. Number one, beautiful spaces, beautiful resources, and it gives open students eyes to just sort of like what opportunities are out there for them. It makes them feel a sense of belonging. It helps them feel like they've earned something, they deserve this stuff, and it helps them see value in themselves. The other piece is the independent schools are able to partner with us in a really easy way. They're a little bit more flexible. They do this for free. And so we really try to run our programming in ways that reduce overhead so that we can spend that money and those resources on our students. So we have that one program, and we are piloting a new program right now that looks more like a traditional out-of-school time program where we go into neighborhood schools in Chicago Public Schools, and we run our programming for our students really similar to what the other program was. This program is called Community Scholars. It's done also in partnership. It was co-designed with Northwestern University. And that program is 150 hours, and the goal is focus on those three pillars: academic enrichment, social emotional learning, high school transition and success, all at this really critical time of seventh grade and eighth grade, so that we know students can thrive in high school and beyond. So those are our two main programs, and we support students throughout high school as well.
Yeah, Yolanda, let's talk a little bit more and go deeper on the programming piece, if you will. And maybe first just say a few things about the students you serve. Who are they? How do they come to High Jump? Are they nominated? Do they apply? Do you recruit? How does that process work?
Our application process just opened up, so we do recruit students. We work with community partners, schools, and we get the word out. CPS is a partner. They send out a letter to students who qualify for our program. So typically it's students who are high achieving, highly motivated, but from limited economic means. Our current cohort, their average family income is about $30,000 for a family of four. We are predominantly serving students of color, and 83% of our students will be the first person in their family to graduate from a four-year college. So really trying to meet the needs of all students in Chicago. Some of them are CPS schools, CPS students. Some are charter, but predominantly we serve students from Chicago.
And what are the core pieces of the programming? You bill yourselves as an academic enrichment program. What does that mean in practice? What do these young people experience in high jump?
They get a high dose of content, right? Academic content, and that's important for them. And we're really looking to give them experiences that enhance their learning beyond the standard curriculum. So giving students an opportunity to try something new, to fail and learn from their mistakes, and to find their passions. So we work to create high doses of academic and social enrichment. I think it's important to note that A lot of kids go to their neighborhood school and it's great, but they don't often have the opportunity to go beyond that standard curriculum and have access to algebra, hands-on science, maybe even enrichment in terms of music or art. So we have been working hard to increase the platform that we give our students and giving them more opportunities to grow, develop, and build resilience too.
And so are these classrooms, young people, they, you talked about them going to these campuses, but I'm just trying to paint an image for listeners here. Are they sitting in a sort of traditional classroom? Are they out and about? You talked about some experiential pieces. Just give me a sense of what a day in the life of participating in the program kind of looks like.
Yeah, so students, let's say Saturday sessions, they arrive about 8:15 and they start coming in, they check in, they get breakfast. And we do a welcome in their homeroom. They are assigned a schedule just like you would in middle school that is departmentalized. And so then they go to classes throughout the day, math, humanities. We have started electives. They get lunch and they have their coursework for the day. And currently with the pandemic, our day ends at 2 o'clock, but we do provide busing for all of our students at this moment. So breakfast, lunch, busing, all of this is free to students. We are one-to-one, which means every student has a device. And so that has really shifted in the pandemic. So now we have materials provided for them. And so that is pretty much a day in the life of High Jump on a Saturday. We are working to expand that once the pandemic ends. We would love to get them back on field trips. We used to do camping trips. We are working with our partners to utilize the space safely. One campus, we've started taking kids outside in the middle of the day for just movement breaks and getting them to be friends. But we know from our students that 98% of our families are extremely happy that we're back in person. They value this connection. We know that school is hard for kids and that their stamina is something that they are building. Many of our students never went back to school when schools opened up in the spring. And so we are working closely with our students and families and teachers to make sure that we are adjusting and meeting the needs of our students in real time. Our kids' satisfaction rate is very high. They love coming to school, which is saying a lot for a middle school on a Saturday and summer, you know, to give up that time. And we respect and value the commitment that our students make to us. And we honor that by, you know, giving them various platforms and opportunities to grow outside their school and classroom setting, because it's important to give them the intellectual and emotional space to be curious, reflect, and recover, and have the resolve to keep learning. And that's really what we're trying to do.
The out-of-school time programs that we've been talking to use a lot of different types of staffing models. You know, some rely on teachers, some have their own staff, some have sort of like AmeriCorps and so forth. What do you all use? Like when young people come to the High Jump programming, do you get teachers from those campuses? Do you have your own staff? Who's actually delivering the programming?
So we have teachers that sign up to teach. Many of them are CPS teachers, a majority of our teachers. It's their second job, so we respect and honor that. It's been tough with the pandemic, as I'm sure everyone has talked about teacher fatigue and burnout, but we have been so fortunate. And what I have to say about High Jump teachers is they are really driven by the mission and their purpose in what they're doing to help students and the youth of Chicago. We also hire High Jump alum to be our teaching assistants. And that is really a special thing that we do, where as soon as the students turn 16, they can come back and apply and they work at High Jump and we pay them. We're often their first job. And so students, in addition to their teachers, they have role models and High Jump alum in the space with them. Every teacher right now has a teaching assistant assigned to them, and they help with transitions, supplies, classroom setup, attendance, lunch distribution. And it's a really valuable experience for all of our students to see that this is a continuum. High Jump doesn't end in eighth grade. You can always come back, and High Jump is this presence in the lives of our students for a long time.
Nate, you talked about belonging. You used that word. As an academic enrichment program, how do you all think about some of the developmental pieces, particularly, you know, this is middle school, this is early adolescence. We know a lot about what young people need at this age range. How do you infuse the programming with some of those developmental pieces?
I think one of the most important things that we have done, we did a few years ago where we did a real deep dive, a whole bunch of focus groups to understand what the specific social, emotional, developmental needs were of kids like ours. Our director of research sat down with groups of enrolled students, groups of recent alums, so high school students, groups of like long-term alums, people in their 30s, parents, teachers, did all these focus groups, basically educated them on some social and emotional learning standards to try and figure out, like, what do you wish you would have had? What do you hope for your kids? What do our students struggle with? What do you struggle with based on what kind of a stakeholder they were? And essentially helped us narrow it down to a couple of social emotional learning standards that we foster and teach and reflect on and get specific individual student progress on all throughout their 2 years in our programs, because we know those five things will help them overcome barriers and will foster a sense of belonging. And I'll give like two really quick examples. So one of those that actually came out was a need for a positive racial and ethnic identity and a respect for others' racial and ethnic identity. So our program is really racially and ethnically diverse, but students didn't all have a full understanding of who they were and what their identity was, and didn't necessarily feel a sense of pride in that, nor did they know how to respond if someone denigrated their race or their ethnic identity or told them who they could be. So we intentionally teach into our understanding of self, how to celebrate self, how to respect and celebrate the identity of everyone else in your classroom, and completely changes the way kids start to connect with others, empathize with others, overcome barriers when they're getting these messages that, like, you don't belong in this school, or you don't belong in this space, or you don't belong in high honors classes. They can really counter that narrative and know that they do. Right? And even times advocate for themselves if they're being blocked out of things. And then one of the other pieces is helping kids understand what it is that they're looking for in that next stage of development. So what I mean by that is Chicago is really driven by some hyper school choice. So we try to take a bunch of that pressure off of them and spend a year and a half where they take a course to really think about fit and match, so that kids can really start to feel more like they know what they're getting into, they have allies, they have resources. And then when kids get to their next high school, which is where you feel a little bit less of a sense of belonging than in your middle school, they have those tools.
The transition is really a challenge, I think, for all students. And you mentioned some of the unique features of Chicago, which is very true, that not all places have this selection aspect, but most middle schoolers or middle school age are transitioning at some point, going into high school, which can be very challenging. And our friends at the University of Chicago have studied this a lot, right? We know the data, at least here locally, around anywhere from, you know, some studies show about a half grade point average drop as students migrate from eighth grade into ninth grade. Some have shown threefold increase in unexcused absences for students that enter high school. This is true, I think, of a lot of middle schoolers in all types of communities, urban, suburban, and rural. So young adolescents on the whole just struggle with this transition. What is your read from your experience with your young people, the students, not just about the selection, we get that complexity, but just in terms of the transition itself, what is your read on why that is so hard? And what are some of the essential ingredients that you're focused on for making that transition easier?
I mean, one of the big reads are the things that we've already discussed, right? You get to a high school, and if you feel like you don't belong or you're ill-equipped to understand and access the content, that's a huge, huge one. One of the other one is just level setting with expectations. So you see students get to high school, and they're just unsure and unclear of what the values are, the norms, and the expectations within that school. And when they learn about it, they learn about it after they've screwed up. They learn about it after their grades got trashed, right? So if you had a really lenient homework policy in your middle school, but you don't have one in your high school, you don't fully understand what that means because you've never had to understand what that means, you get dinged on it, right? And so I think it's really important at these transition years that people remember that the rug is getting pulled out from under kids. And just because they crossed over from eighth grade to ninth grade, they're not all of a sudden a young adult who can fully advocate for themselves, who seeks out all the answers on their own. And I think ninth grade staff and faculty really need to treat young students like it's gradual release and really reground them in their community.
Yeah, I think that everything Nate said is correct, and it ultimately leads to students feeling a bit of loss. You know, they've been in a school since, some of them since they were preschool till 18, so they've grown up, and all of a sudden they not only go into a new space, but because of school choice, often not with their friends. And so we have students traveling very far from their neighborhood, outside of their comfort zone, perhaps being the only person of color in that school, or a very small percentage of people that look like them on the staff and also in the student body. So I think that plays a big factor into why it can be difficult. But also we know that there are non-cognitive factors that influence academic achievement. And often I think schools focus so much on test scores and grades, and we know that those are incredibly important, but they're not necessarily creating an environment that supports those non-cognitive skills. And High Jump, what we try to do is we want the high dosage of academic and content skills and rigor that is absolutely important, but we want to combine that with this high level supports and creating an environment that encourages students to reflect and to grow, and giving them rich opportunities to develop those skills that they need to cope with the world as it is, while also having the courage to challenge the world. What I know now is that the middle schooler that is coming to High Jump is different than the kid that came 10 years ago. They have a lot more to say. They have a lot more vocabulary. And they are, in some ways, a little more sure of who they are because the world has been telling them who they are. One thing that I know we have worked hard to think about is, like, how are we giving students a broader definition of success, not just educational attainment? And that includes, again, being aware of themselves and the various paths that they can take while developing those competencies to pursue their dreams.
That was part one of my interview with Nate Pietrini and Yolanda Luna-Meraz. In part two, we will talk about indicators for success, tracking outcomes across social, emotional, and academic domains, and the role High Jump and out-of-school time programs in general can play in the education space going forward. That's in just a moment on the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, where we feature conversations with researchers, practitioners, program developers, and advocates for young adolescents in the middle school years. Recently, I spoke with Christine Bay, Tracy Hogans Foster, and Michael Stangey. Christine is Assistant Professor of Education Psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. Tracy and Mike are middle school science teachers in the Richmond area, Tracy in the city of Richmond and Mike in adjacent Chesterfield County. The three are engaged in a five-year-long initiative funded by the National Science Foundation to examine student engagement in science instruction in the middle grades through a method called discourse, which, as Christine notes, goes beyond just developing knowledge in science.
When I was thinking about what do I want to spend at least 5 years doing and studying, like, my answer to that question was, I want to study how kids talk in class. Kids have so much to say. They come in with so many crazy ideas, good ideas, unexpected ideas. I really want to understand how we can create spaces for them to do that meaningfully and in ways that support not just their science learning, but being good arguers, critical thinkers, excited, productive members of society.
You can catch all of my conversation with Christine, Tracy, and Mike in a previous episode. And now, returning for part two of my conversation with Nate Pietrini and Yolanda Luna-Meraz. I love that focus on agency. I mean, what I heard you say is a lot around sort of agency, which, again, you know, having young people, you know, feel like they have some control or ownership over their direction and also what, you know, what's happening on in their communities. That's very developmentally appropriate. Let's talk a little bit more about some of those aspects and how you measure them. I'm interested in the kinds of things that you're tracking. What are some of the leading indicators of those that you track? Do you look at things like student motivation or self-efficacy, or you talked about, Nate, the social emotional skills, teasing out some of those foundational assets and capacities that are tied to what we know about early adolescent development and help students navigate and perform well in school? How do you track and measure those kinds of things?
When students are within our middle school program, the main things that we are looking at are absolutely social-emotional learning growth, and along the areas that we specifically as an organization have laid out as being most essential and high quality for our kids. Ability to develop learning strategies, academic grit, self-advocacy, positive racial and ethnic identity. We actually evaluate that for every single kid 3 times their first year and 2 times in their second year. And we have reports on every individual kid, what areas they need to grow in. And we get that stuff to the teachers to figure out how individual classes are doing, individual grades are doing, specific students. So we really want to focus on those things, because things like grades and attendance and student perseverance are some of the best leading indicators of future success. And we know that there are specific social-emotional learning skills that, when developed, will ensure that kids show up to school, that kids do their homework, that they prepare for their exams, right? So to us, those leading indicators are basically all SEL, and that's why we teach those, develop those, and push those. And then along that way, we are tracking things like the kids' GPAs in their schools and making sure that students aren't slipping, and then when they are, intervening where needed. And same thing with their attendance, tracking their attendance, how are kids doing in their home schools, and are they slipping? And when they are, we intervene. You know, we try to think of ourselves that while our students are in our program, we're looking for continuous improvement type data. You know, we believe that our kids are going to get better if we think about how is this data that we're gathering helping us to develop a next step for a whole class or a next step for individual students. And if it doesn't do that, then we're probably not going to prioritize it or not collect it at all. While we are not like an organization that gives credit to students for courses, like if they, Yolanda said earlier, it's safe for them to fail and experiment, and we want them to feel that, we do teach specific Common Core learning, Common Core state standards. You teach like next generation science standards, and we have skills as well that we are working on, and we're tracking those for each student, giving them individual feedback and helping them grow against those skills and standards, knowing that these are some of those leading indicators. And if they fail, that's okay. We'll keep working on it, and we don't remove students for it. There's no penalty for failing, as we're working with them as individuals. And we know that these leading indicators work. Just to give an example of what the downstream indicators are for our students, for every 1 year that a kid is in high jump, they make 2 years worth of gains on standardized tests. And then when we look at like the longest term pieces that we track, 83% of our kids have no one in their family who's ever graduated from college, right? By the time students are 6 years removed from high school, 87% of them will have graduated with a bachelor's degree. And you can compare that to other kids like them. If you look nationally at what you would call high performing but low income students, so top quartile in academics but bottom quartile in family income, those students only graduate college at a rate of about 41%. So we're also more than doubling their likelihood of graduating college from doing our programs.
So we're in a time period right now where a lot of folks across the board in their families, in their professions, in schools, in businesses are taking stock and reflecting and examining futures. So let's do that a little bit here, if we can, about high jump and also just really the field of education and out of school time. The pandemic has uncovered a lot of things with respect to inequities, of course, but it's also shown a light on how much we put on educators in schools to accomplish, and often with limited resources. And we're clearly seeing some of that strain, which is exacerbated, of course, by the trickiness of teaching in a pandemic. Out-of-school time has a role to play here. You know, traditionally, out-of-school time programs have focused on more of the developmental aspects, which can be especially helpful now, given all that young people have experienced. And just from a practical perspective, these programs in various ways add to the capacity of schools or of educators with resources, more time, more people, more programming, more supports. As you both reflect on the field of education, where do you see programs like High Jump fitting in going forward, and how do you see it changing?
Within the field, I think I wish we all had a deep understanding of the fact that the research says that high quality out of school time programs are very, very beneficial to kids. Like, there's an abundance of research that tells you that it helps students believe that they can go to college and graduate college. It helps students see and understand and get inspired by careers. It can close gaps in things like representation and varied fields. It keeps kids safe. There have been studies that neighborhoods that have more out-of-school time programs have decrease in violence, decrease in food insecurity. Like, there's so much value to it. Not that those are things that schools can't provide on their own, but we know that there's that need. And additionally, especially in a city and in a district where we should be working hard to make life easier and better for kids and for parents, you know, I think we have a responsibility, especially as leaders, to provide as much free and high quality stuff out of school time so that parents can work and their kids can not just like be watched, but be cared for and supported. So where do I see the field going? It seems like there's been a little bit of an understanding that this can close the gap, but I hope that it's not just about intervention, that it's about a new path forward. Wouldn't it be great if every kid in public school, especially around the country, had an opportunity to do free, high quality, interest-driven enrichment after school for up to 2 hours every day? Think about what kind of a future we'd be creating for those kids. I would love to see it. And then that sort of dovetails into a little bit of where High Jump is going. So we have always wanted to make sure that we could serve every single child in Chicago who's interested in our program and eligible for our program. And so we think that looks like 600 to 700 students per year, and we're serving about 280. So we're trying to grow and offer that, and then launching a second program where we are running traditional but high quality out of school time programming for students in specific neighborhood public schools. So we're doing that in three different schools right now as a pilot program. And if it works well, we're really going to expand it. And that piece is about access. If you can't do Saturdays, then you couldn't traditionally do High Jump. So we're trying to just remove a bunch of those barriers to getting access to programming like High Jump. And we hope that the future for High Jump is two high-quality middle school programs and every kid in one of them who wants to be in one. And then the ability, when they get to high school, to make sure that they have their different needs being met.
Ilana, what are your reflections on the future of the field and on High Jump?
Well, I'll start with High Jump. I want to echo what Nate said. I think one thing that I hope comes out of this is that people would see us as a better partner and an asset to what is already happening in schools, deepening our relationship with neighborhood schools so that we can bring more awareness and increase access for all students. And that's through our core program, growing that, as well as community scholars. I think for the field, the pandemic has really forced all institutions to evolve and adapt and pivot. And so what will be interesting is reflecting on that and deciding what stays, what goes, and, you know, challenging ourselves to continue to innovate in the field of education and in this space. You know, we were forced to remove a lot of roadblocks that in the past or 2 years ago, we would have said, that's not our problem, that's not our job. And schools had to do it. We had to do it for the betterment of our students and our families. And we learned a lot about the real need of families, food insecurities, Wi-Fi issues, technology, and how reliant our families are on High Jump and the schools. And so the question is, can we ever go back to pretending like we don't know? I don't think we can. And so as an organization, I know we're looking at, okay, what are the aspects of the pandemic that have taught us a lot and we need to keep because we're filling a need and it's important in order to continue to fill that gap? And what are the things that, as educators, we need to consider and reflect?
Finally, for the two of you, if there was one thing, one bit of advice based on your experience delivering academic enrichment opportunities to middle school aged youth that you would offer to educators both in school and after school and in summer programs of things they either ought to know or ought to be doing, what would it be?
I say this as an educator and as a parent and as a teacher at heart, that we've had to reevaluate what matters to us, what actually matters when we're in front of our students, and certainly scores and grades. It's part of it. It's not the complete picture. And what I would like people to know and for me to move forward as an educator is that we need to strive to instill in our scholars a love of learning, a better understanding of who they are, and the desire to keep learning even when it's hard, to persevere. And I think those are the tenets that will get our kids through COVID recovery. And we don't know what it will look like in 5 years, but I know that if our kids know themselves better and they have a passion to explore and to learn, that they're going to come out stronger, and so will we.
I'd say number one, I think every educator should be connected to out-of-school time programming somehow. We can see our students differently when we're connected with them outside of the classroom. We can make our school space better when we're connected outside of the classroom. The people who are probably going to deliver that best are the people in that school because they know the kids, they have the built-in trust. And so schools should really commit to that, and everybody should be connected with it. And piece number two, because I'm still a principal at heart, I think a lot about the role of like self-improvement at our discipline of teaching. I think that when teachers can learn to get better at teaching in groups, you can really change the face of a school. When a school can be organized in a way that 5, 6, 7 teachers can identify a problem, study and read on that problem together, implement, propose solutions, evaluate each other, reflect, and then improve and do it all again. When you and across multiple disciplines in a school at the same time, you will see dramatic improvements to the things that Yolanda was talking about kids, to the quality of teaching, to the quality of student learning. I'm gonna be a big proponent of developing these teacher learning communities for the rest of my life.
Nate and Yolanda, this has been a terrific conversation. Thanks so much for sharing High Jump with us and for your insights on the field and where we're headed. I appreciate you and all you're doing for young adolescents. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you for having us.
That was Nate Pietrini and Yolanda Luna-Miraz from High Jump. You can follow High Jump online at highjumpchicago.org, on Facebook at High Jump CHI, and on Instagram and Twitter at High Jump Chicago. Thanks for joining the Lessons in Adolescence podcast, a production of Remaking Middle School, an initiative that seeks to transform the learning and development experience for young adolescents in the middle school years. Remaking Middle School brings together good educational practice in school and out of school with the latest developmental science. You can learn about Remaking Middle School or find more resources about the topics of this podcast on the web at remakingmiddleschool.org, or learn more about the founding partner organizations, the University of Virginia's Youth Next Center, on the web at education.virginia.edu/youth-next, or on Twitter at youth_next, and the Association for Middle Level Education, on the web at amle.org, or on Twitter at amle. The Lessons in Adolescence podcast is produced by Abby Gillespie and me, Jason Cascarino. Editing by Paige Waterhouse. You can listen to or download each episode at the Remaking Middle School website, on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening.